So today is October 17th, 2013, and we are continuing the mitzvah of Kiddush Bechairis, the mitzvah of sanctifying the firstborn. We had spoken about several different explanations and reasons behind this mitzvah. The main reason, as in the Pasuk mentions, is that the Ribbono Shel Olam did the great neis of Makas Bechairis, and the greatness of Makas Bechairis, number one, was Bechizek Yod. It was stronger, as the Ralbag mentions, it was stronger than many of the other, or all the other Makos, and was sort of the straw that broke, it wasn't straw, it was the heavy burden that broke the camel's back and actually encouraged and motivated Pare to let us go. So that was a great maifis, that was a great miracle. But in addition, we have the idea that the firstborns were redeemed by that. And as Hashem, in a sense, acquired our firstborns by way of we were in line, the firstborns were in line to have the same fate as the Bechayri Mitzrayim, and as we mentioned, it was only the firstborns from the mother that were in line to have that fate. But the Dam Pesach and the Dam Mila saved us from that fate. So that's the second thing. Then we discussed last time at length another idea, and that was the idea of that when a person is in a precarious situation, and perhaps the Midas Hadin is hovering over him and wants to, not wants to, but the din would be otherwise that he should die. There's a possibility through tzedakah or through other sorts of means to earn a schus that would then save the person even in that sort of situation. You know, I was just learning the Gemara last night, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that, I'm having a hard time adjusting to this. Am I looking at the screen or am I looking? Are you, you're the real people and this is the, I'm not sure, okay. The Gemara Shana says like this: why do we blow shofar? Why taikin umerian? Why do we blow shofar? Gemara has a whole bunch of different questions till it really crystallizes what it's asking. The Gemara says, in short, why at the end the Gemara says why do we blow the tkiyas, the initial tkiyas, and then we blow a second time? Now we know we have the minhag today that we blow 100 kailas, but in the times of the Gemara, it was basically, it was just like 60 kailas. 30 and then 30. Now just in short, really, in order to fulfill the obligation from the Torah, we have 30 sounds. That's all you need in order to fulfill the obligation from the Torah. So because the Torah says three times trua, and each trua has to be surrounded by a tkiyah, we don't know what true is, so we do all three types, and we end up with 30 kailas. Because the shvarim trua, even though it really is all symbolic of, or taking the place of a trua, but we call it two shvarim trua, so we call that 30 kailas in our vernacular, right? Tashat three times, tashrat, tarat three times, and tashrat three times, right? It's 30 kailas. The Gemara is asking, why do we blow 30 kailas, and then we blow a second time, second set of 30. We call them tkiyas de miyushiv and tkiyas de mu'umid. You already fulfilled your obligation with 30. Why do you have to do more? So the Gemara says, k'dei la'arvev ha-satan. So there's two pshat in order to confuse the satan. Rashi says one pshat is, remember Neil, what Rashi says there? How does it confuse the satan? He says when he sees that Klal Yisrael is mechavev the mitzvahs, that they love the mitzvahs, that it's very dear to them, the mitzvahs, he gets flustered and he's off his game. Taisa says a different pshat. Taisa says the pshat is because the end of days, it says Yitoka b'shofar gadol, big shofar is going to be blown. And on that day we also know, as we say in the Chagadya, V'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shachat l'malach ha'mavis. Right?
According to the Rashi, is it like that we went twice?
We're going to get back to that in a second. I'm just trying to put both Pshat and Dan on the table, and then we'll discuss this. The Taisa says in the end of days, the Malach HaMavis knows that his end is near. Right, he's going to be shechted on that day. And what's the sound that reminds him of that? We know sounds have the ability to remind us of situations. And if there was a certain CD in your car and you're listening to it when you're going to a simcha of some sort, and you listen to it many, many times, and you don't hear it for a bunch of years, and you listen to it again, it reminds you of that time. It's interesting. It has that ability to do that. But in any case, so he knows that sound of a shofar is the end of days. End of days is going to be shechted, so he's worried his demise is near. Fine. So the question for both Rashi and Taisus is, the Gemara is talking about why we blow twice. Two sets. If in fact the shofar is something that, let's say according to Taisus, reminds me of the end of the day, so then the first set should be, you're not giving me a reason why we blow a second set. What do we need to blow a second set for? The first set alone should remind him. If the sound itself is something that reminds him of the end of days and the day that he's going to meet his demise, the first set is sufficient. And the same with Rashi. You want to show that it's there, we do the mitzvah. If I asked you, what's a bigger schus? Blowing the shofar to fulfill the obligation, or blowing the shofar to do a minhag afterwards, the mea kailis of Eim Sisra. It's important, but it's not essential. You know, when they ask me to blow for women, you know, the second blowing for women, so I do that at home. I don't blow 100 kailis. The women are not mechuyev anyway, but you want to do it? Okay, so 30 kailis, I don't blow 100 kailis. But anybody who blows shofar very quickly, your lips become swollen, and if you do it right, some people, their hearts get swollen because they put it into their heart. But it's my father used to wake us up in the morning for shacharis. So one of my brothers had a little extra challenge getting up. So one day I remember, my father was getting very, very aggravated because he kept on waking up and he didn't get up. So he looks for something that he could use to try to get him up. So he found the shofar. So he picked up the shofar. So I was getting dressed. I look and I see my father take the shofar. So I don't know, he's probably going to blow it. It'll wake him up. And he takes the shofar and he's pushing it into my brother. He says, the shofar has to penetrate the soul. Torture tactic. Some people use their whole heart to blow because they're shy for it. Anyway, but so it's very clear, if you look at the Gemara, it's very clear that the pshat is the following. We're dealing with people as we were speaking, as the Rikanti or the Rikanati says. We're dealing with people who, the Bechirim perhaps, from Midas HaDin perspective, from the regular Midas HaDin that is prevalent in the world, they would not have survived. Halalo avdei avodah zarah, halalo avdei avodah zarah. We were both engaged in avodah zarah. We needed something, a schus beyond that. Rabbi Hashem gave us the two mitzvahs. And those two mitzvahs were what helped us, what saved us from this fate. But the Bechirim were in line to have the same fate as the Bechirim of Mitzrayim. Right? So beyond Midas HaDin, to procure the Rachmei Shamayim, they had to have a step beyond that. So what we're saying is exactly what Neil was pointing out. Terrific. When we blow the first time, right, that's the chiyuv, that's the obligation. The satan is not so much bothered by that. Why? Because the average person is either a Beinoni, like the Rambam says, or Chas v'Shalom, worse. As far as Midas HaDin is concerned, on the books, there's not much hope. That doesn't make him shake in his boots. So it's far, but what does make him shake in his boots? You know what makes him shake in his boots? when we blow a second time, to show chavivus hamitzvah, to show the, how dear the mitzvah is. It's not enough one time. We want more. We want to be reminded all the 10 reasons that Reb Sadia Gaon gives. We want more reasons to remember Hashem, to remember the end of days, to remember Tchias HaMeisim, to do tshuva, whatever it might be. We want more of the Shofar. When you do that, what you're doing is, you're going lifnim mishuras hadin. You're going beyond the letter of the law. Now the regular midas hadin, like we had in Mitzrayim, the regular midas hadin is not going to be, so to speak, the law of the land. That's not how Hashem is going to judge us. Why? Because Hashem, how does this work? Hashem works midah keneged midah. We know in the Gemara in Brachas, the Gemara says that the Ribbono Shel Olam, I was going to get a Gemara, but I don't want to lose the connection here. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says on the Pasuk, Yiso Hashem Panav Elecha, the Berkas Kohanim, one of the Pesukim is Hashem should turn His face towards us. Right? That's the Kohanim bless us. Question is, what's this bracha going to do for us? It sounds like the Gemara understands that the word Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, he should show favoritism to you. He should turn towards you with extra rachamim. So the Gemara says, but we know that Hashem is not mevater. He doesn't excuse things just like that. Any person who says that, Chazal tell us, right, is a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. Don't worry, Hashem will be. So what kind of bracha are the Kohanim saying? Hashem should show favoritism to you. What kind of favoritism? The answer is no, it is Midah Keneged Midah. Why? Listen to this. This is fascinating, it's crucial, and it's powerful. It is Midah Keneged Midah. Why? Because the Gemara gives an example. Hashem tells us that we should make a bracha achreina only if we're totally satisfied. We're machmer to do so, ad kezayis, ad kebeya, even if we're minimally satisfied. What is the Gemara telling us? The Gemara is telling us an unbelievable thing. The Gemara is saying like this. Hashem works midah keneged midah. If you're the sort of person that when you serve Hashem, you do just the letter of the law and that's it, then Hashem will say, okay, when it comes time to judge you, I'll do the very same thing. Whatever the law is, let's see. Midas hadin, how are you going to... Nobody could survive the midas hadin. Right? In fact, there's a famous Aruch Chaim on the Pasuk in Vizayis HaBracha. Zayis HaBracha, Sheberach Ma'isha. What does it say? Ish Ho'elikim. Means a man of din. What that means really is a man that would have survived the din. The only person in history, that's what the Aruch Chaim says. Ma'isha Rabbeinu would have survived the din of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the average person, not like that. So what's our key? How are we saved? How are the Bechayrim saved? That's what we're talking about here from the Rikanti. How were they saved? You know how they were saved? They went beyond the letter of the law. In this case, it was not just what they had then, but the Ribbono Shel Olam gave them extra mitzvahs. Today, it's already a mitzvah. We have to do the basics, the mitzvah itself. But when we do a mitzvah, we do it in such a way where we go beyond the letter of the law. We show chavivus that it's dear. We want more of the mitzvah. We want more of a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, oh, you're going beyond the letter of the law. You're showing me how dear the mitzvahs are to you, even though you're not just doing it to get away with it. Like that expression, right? I'm davening. I'm ugedavent. I already davened already. I'm like putter from the way we unfortunately approach mitzvahs. Many people this day and age. Many people we do mitzvahs sometimes by rote. We do it with very little passion. We do it with very little excitement and very little recognition of how beneficial the mitzvahs are to us. When you do your mitzvahs like that, where do you end up? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a famous piece, right? When you do the mitzvahs in such a way where you do it casually, you know, then it doesn't rub off on other people. The example you provide for other people is, I do it because I have to do it. But if you live your mitzvahs with a passion and you show while you're doing the mitzvahs that there's nothing better for you than that, that you're addicted to kirvas elikim l'tayv, to the connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so it's a different kind of living. And that's really, if you look, the real key to chinuch, if you look at Rav Hirsch has a whole sefer on chinuch, but he didn't write it on chinuch per se, they compiled a lot of his ideas. His main theme there is example, teaching by example. You could teach people I think we once said this story with the locomotive, with the Rebbe, right? The Rebbe went to go see the locomotive for the first time, right? They asked him, what did you learn from seeing the locomotive? He said, as ein varme can see in 100 kalte, one warm one can pull 100 cold ones. If you're passionate, you're excited, you exude this appreciation, this deep and passionate appreciation for Torah and mitzvahs, then what are the people around you going to learn? That's what they're going to learn. They're going to learn that this is, just by example, by watching, by observing you, that this person really believes in what he's doing. You see people like that. Some people are in business, you know. Some people, they do what they need to do and they get the job done. And some people become passionate about what they do. They really believe in it. They think it's, you know, they're excited about helping people, about whatever it might be. That's what Ramesha says, that a lot of the children of the war survivors, unfortunately, they went through, we can't blame them, but they went through the war like that, and they were always walking around with heavy hearts after having lost everything. Not to judge them in any which way. But that's unfortunately the way they had to live. And those that survived and actually had children that ended up remaining from were people who recognized that despite everything they went through, they still, the service of Hashem, to the contrary, they strengthened the service of Hashem, etc. While those were giants of spirit, people that were able to do that. But the fact is, their children saw this example, that despite the fact that their parents went through what they went through, it only strengthened them. It rubbed off on the children. And there were unfortunately many who lived, as Rav Meisher says, this is Shveretz Zayin Ayid, he writes, people, they do what they need to do. What can I do? So the children said, okay, for daddy, he had the strength, he had the interest to do it anyway, despite the fact that it was difficult. I'm not in for that, I'm not interested. And they went off, unfortunately. A person does mitzvahs like that, you do it with an excitement, you do, like the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, you do a second round of Shofar to Chaparayin, even more of what the Shofar represents, that's precisely what makes the Satan shake in his boots. Because as soon as he says, he's confident that he's going to win, he's going to prosecute, and by the letter of the law, he's going to win. But as soon as you show that you're doing mitzvahs with chiba, with love, and with passion and appreciation for the mitzvahs, the rules on the playing field have changed entirely. And there's no way at that point that he could win. He can't, because as soon as you go beyond the letter of the law, that's what Hashem is going to do for you. His job is finished. And if his job is finished, he gets flustered. He says, now Hashem is going to show favoritism, so to speak. Is it really favoritism? That was the question. The answer is no, it's tit for tat. It's mida k'neged mida. You went beyond the letter of the law, so will I. And the truth is, in fact, that's most likely what Taisus means as well, is that the fact that there's a famous kliyakar about that Taisus. Taisus says that he's worried, it sounds like the end of days. So Neil's question, what about the first blowing? That doesn't show him the end of days. Answer is yes. Fulfillment of a mitzvah is just for the bare, basic, like we mentioned that Ramban a few months ago, just fulfillment of the basic mitzvahs, it's very good. And that may prevent a lot of the tzaris that Chas Shalom have unfortunately befallen the Jewish people. But to be zeicha to geula, to then have back what we had initially, and to have that, the ultimate closeness to Rabbi Shalom, for that you have to go much more, you have to go beyond that. That's living Torah with a chivur. So when Taisus says that this reminds him of the end of days, the Kliyakar says, we would ask a question. This is the way Taisus asked the question. By the way the Kliyakar asked the question. The sound of the Shofar reminds him of the end of days. How long has the Satan been around? How long has the Yetzirah been around? Thousands of years. And he's one of the most cunning entities that there are, correct? He's not going to realize that every year we blow the Shofar and then this is, okay, they're doing it again. Says the Kliyakar, exactly the point. He's not the fool. We're the fools. If we recognize that by doing the Shofar properly, we could bring Mashiach, we would embrace it with 5 times more, 10 times, 100 times more than what we do today. He's the one that recognizes the power of the Shofar, and that's why he shakes. He says, if they do this mitzvah properly, that's it. It's the end of the day. That's going to lead to the Shofar Shel Mashiach. It's all one Shofar. One leads to the next. He's the smart one. We're the fools. But one has to say, if that's the pshat in the Tosis, one has to say that's only going, as the Gemara seems to be saying, only on the second round. You know which is the shayfer that could lead to Mashiach. Blowing the shayfer initially, the first, just to fulfill the obligation, that's great. That will sustain us in Golus and prevent Ra'is Rabbis Vitzaris, as the Ramban says there in Devarim. But to actually have the Geula, that you need a step beyond that. You need a step. You need even more connection to the Rebbe Yisrael. How's that? You show Chavivus. I want more of the Shayfer. I want to go beyond the letter of the law. Oh, that's a whole different level. They're acting like that. They're showing Chavivus for the Shayfer. Now we're going to go beyond. Now there's a different set of rules here in this game. He starts shaking. He says, now this could very easily, we're right at the brink of bringing this to Mashiach. He shakes in his boots. He's flustered. He cannot prosecute properly. That's presumably the explanation of the Gemara over there. But that's really what happened here by the letter of the law, halalu v'halalu. They should have been destroyed. Hashem saved us by giving us these mitzvahs so that we would earn the rachamim, extra rachamim from the Rebbe Yisrael, and we were saved. So in order to remember that unbelievable salvation, by way of, the salvation came about by way of Hashem providing us with extra mitzvahs. So in order to remember that, we have this special mitzvah Bechor. Not just to remember, as we said, the wonder, the Pella that happened, and not just to remember the fact that we were led out of Mitzrayim, but that it was done in such a way that we had a salvation based on an opportunity to live beyond the letter of the law, to show our Chavivas, to seek out greater closeness to the Rebbe Yisrael, and thereby we were Zeichet and Rachamim. That's a message that goes far beyond just the basics of Kiddush Becheres. And that's what he's saying, really, that anybody who's in a situation, that's what Rikandi is saying, anybody who's in a situation where they are living life in such a way where it's the letter of the law, they're not going to survive if they would go one step further. Tzedakah tatzel mimavis. What's tzedakah? You know what? If you ever learned the laws of tzedakah, there's a big question that comes up. What are the laws of tzedakah? If you have a chiyuv to give meiser, right? So many poskim say it's a chiyuv to give meiser ksafim, to give meiser, to give. So what's tzedakah? Every time you give money, you give from meiser. Most people, when they give tzedakah, they call it, they're giving tzedakah. They take from their meiser and they give. What's the difference between tzedakah and meiser? So many of the places can say that tzedakah is beyond meiser. You give meiser from your money, 1/10. You tithe your money. Now beyond that, it's tzedakah. If in fact that's true, so now it's very appropriate. You have matzasi kaifer. What's the kaifer? Tzedakah tatzalimavis. That's getting an extra schus, showing that you're going beyond the absolute chiyuv. You're giving more, you're embracing these mitzvahs. Hashem deals with you in a different way. And you see this throughout history, that those people who pursued their avodas Hashem in a way that was beyond what the basic expectations, Hashem deals with them also beyond the basic expectations, and He gives them bracha far beyond it. The greatest example, of course, is Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu ended up at such an old age. His wife, the Gemara says that she didn't even have a rechem. I believe it says that about Sarah. Does it say that about Sarah or just
yeah,
about... She had no rechem. She had no uterus. What? Hashem had to create... The answer is, the way Avraham Avinu served the Rebbe Yisrael was far, far, far beyond what his basic expectation. And the 10 tests are the greatest example of that, right? And you showed, Avraham Avinu showed that he was serving the Rebbe Yisrael in this way. It was far beyond anything anybody else did. Now, I just want to conclude with a very beautiful vart on this parsha that is related to this. And that is something we mentioned way back, probably over a year ago, when we were talking about the Tamei HaMitzvahs initially, the approach, the whole introduction that we had to the reasons behind mitzvahs. So we mentioned on this week's parsha. This week's parsha is Parshas Vayera. And in this week's parsha we have the Akedah. So I heard many years ago from Rav Mordechai Gifter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, my father's Rebbe. He said in the name of Rav Motl Pogromansky. Rav Motl Pogromansky was a giant, a genius of a man, and a giant of in the yeshiva world before the war. He survived the war, but he had terrible ailments and stomach problems, and he, unfortunately, he passed away after the war, like in the 1950 or so. But he was famous. They didn't have, after the war, they didn't have any anesthesia, and he needed a stomach operation, and it would have been extremely, excruciatingly painful. And he told him, don't worry, just give me a couple minutes to think about the Torah, and after a few minutes, you can do whatever you want to me. I'm not going to feel it. He was so focused and so involved in his Torah. Anyway, Rav Motl Pogromansky asked the following question. We find in history that there were other people that had the strength of character to sacrifice a child. One could argue, even if it was done for an Avodah Zarah, okay, but certainly we find people who did it, one person at least, the Melech Moav, we find, did it, so he sacrificed his son to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So his question was the following. We find that the Akedah is something that we mention time and time again. Time and time again. You look at the Slichas, three quarters of the Slichas are about the Akedah. It's unbelievable. And that's why it's called Ma'achelas. Hashem said, take the Ma'achelas, take the knife. Rashi says, why did he call the knife Ma'achelas? The thing that eats, the consumer? Why? Because, not because it was commercialized, but because until this very day, we derive benefit. We're using up we still have benefit from this situation, from this mitzvah. So it's so powerful until he's ready to give up his son. All right, the question is, why was that so far and beyond anything, let's say, Melech Mayav did? You find other people in history that were willing to give up their own lives, they were willing to give up the child's lives. This happened, you hear the stories of the Inquisition, the pogroms, Crusades, the Holocaust, whatever you talk about, there were Jews that gave up their lives. You have kinnis about it, right? Jews that gave up their lives and their children's lives for the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So in the Velt they say, yes, of course, subsequent to Avraham Avinu, he instilled in his children the strength to be able to do that. But he was the one that started it. The initial sacrifice was his, and that became now part of our DNA. Okay, that's what some people say. But Rav Motl Pogromansky wanted to really describe the greatness, to really zero in on the greatness of the Akedah. And he said the following, just a very, very powerful statement. If you look in the Torah says, what's the pasuk? Ati yodati ki yirei elikim ata. Now I know that you're yirei elikim, that you fear Hashem. You didn't hold back your son from me. Asks Rav Motl Pogromansky, if you had to describe the greatness of this action, you say he was ready to sacrifice his son. He was willing to sacrifice his son. Lechasakta means you didn't withhold your son. Why does the Torah speak in a backwards way? Not you were ready to sacrifice, that's how I would describe it. You were ready to sacrifice your son. No, you didn't withhold your son. So he says it must be that the Torah is describing the greatness of this action and why this action is head and shoulders above any other personal sacrifice that any person, any human being ever made. And he says, he explains it in the following way. We know that Avraham Avinu, if you're a Talmid of Shal Avraham Avinu, one of the great midas of Avraham Avinu was Rahman. He was a Rahman. If a person's a Rahman, if he's a compassionate person, and he engages in such a cruel, seemingly cruel act of sacrificing his son, how does he do it? How do you do it? So we give a little muscle of a guy jumping into a swimming pool. If the swimming pool is freezing cold, how do you jump in? You know that it's going to kill you for the first 60 seconds, 2 minutes. You're going to be freezing jumping. The answer is you brace yourself and you try not to think about it. You jump in, you'll have no choice but to sustain that pain for the whatever it might be, 2 minutes, and then you're free to swim and enjoy yourself. The Melech Mayav built up such an appreciation for Hashem And he was misguided, because the Rebbeinu Shlomo never asked him to do this, and there's also to talk about that. It's true. But in the very least, if we talk about the strength of character, did he have it? He did, but in which way did he go about it? He ignored. He built up such an appreciation for the service of Hashem that he ignored his feelings towards his son. And he built up a greater love and a greater appreciation for Hashem further, which arguably may have been a good thing or a bad thing. It's not so clear. But in the end, he was feeling such great love to the Rebbeinu Shlomo that his son to him was like totally disregarded any feelings. His son to him was like a rock. He desensitized himself to the feelings that he had to his son. For a person like that, he's built up right or wrong, it's irrelevant. The person who does it in that way, the technique he uses, is to disregard, to desensitize himself to the feelings that he had to his son. To sheft the rock is not a difficult thing. Had Hashem demanded it of him, it may have been a wonderful thing to do, and he would have gotten schar and so on, but nowhere near what Avraham Avinu would have done. Did. Why? Because the way he went about it was, he built up a disregard for this. He was totally, it was a rock. To cut a rock is not a great feat. It was a great feat to build up appreciation of Hashem and therefore desensitize himself to the sun. But if you look at it, if you want to dissect it, the action itself was basically cutting a rock. And again, had Hashem commanded him to do it, he would have gotten reward for it. He didn't, so it's a different story. When it came to Avraham Avinu, if you look at the Midrashim, Chazal, they speak about the situation, he was absolutely fully aware. And not only fully aware, he was feeling every ounce of his compassion to his son. He was crying. He kept on asking Hashem, you're sure you're this and that? It means through the action, he was totally sensitized. He was in the height of his sensitivity, in the height of his compassion. This was one of his great meetings. And he took all that whole package, feeling the greatest pain that he could possibly feel, and still be willing to give that up. He had every reason in the book to hold back. Every reason, and he was feeling the acute pain of proceeding with this action, and he did it anyway, because he knew that this was the right thing. That's a different level. It's an entirely different level. So that when the Torah describes his action, what does the Torah say? The greatness lies in the fact, not that you were willing to give up your son, you just disregard him. Lechasakta, you didn't withhold him. You know what withhold is, you didn't withhold, you know what that's describing? The fact that he was feeling every reason and every bit of pain that would demand of him to withhold from doing this action. And he didn't. He gave all that up. That's living on a different level. And that's why till this very day, it's called Machelas, till this very day we bank on that action. Because that was the ultimate sacrifice, and that was the ultimate living beyond the letter of the law, and living with chiba for the Rebbeinu Shlomo, with love for the Rebbeinu Shlomo. As soon as a person acts in that way, and that's no wonder that the Shofar, as we spoke before, the Shofar is the chiba of mitzvahs, the Shofar is one of the 10 reasons of Rav Geinitz to remind us of the Akedah. Because that was the ultimate sacrifice in this way, to show chivuv of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to show our love for Hashem. You live in that way, the Rebbeinu Shlomo deals with you in a different way as well. We should be zeicha to arvev asatan every day, and to only have wonderful things from the Rebbeinu Shlomo based on living in such a way, in a passionate way with the Rebbeinu Shlomo, in a passionate way with the mitzvahs. And we could learn that lesson from the mitzvah of Kiddush B'chayres.